This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There is a podcast that is a world unto itself.
A podcast as boundless as space and as timeless as infinity.
It is the place between light and shadow.
Science and superstition.
You've entered
the fifth dimension.
The latest series from the Consequence Podcast Network will open the door into Jordan Peele's new revival of The Twilight Zone, and it will go as far as the limits of the mind itself. Subscribe to The Fifth Dimension.
The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by the generous support of listeners like you. To learn how you can support this and other fine geek programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
Welcome to Nerdy Show, an increasingly peculiar podcast that's veered wildly off the course of the trajectory that we laid out for us about 10 years ago, and now we're just a show where if you're not listening to it already, you're probably never going to listen to it ever again. Hi, I'm Cap.
Hey, I'm Doug.
I'm Eleanor.
Wait, who?
Eleanor.
Eleanor what?
Eleanor Edwards, I've been here the whole time, I don't know what you
did. Oh, Eleanor, you've been on the show innumerable times, and everything is normal, and nothing is in the least bit strange.
Yeah. I don't know why you're making a big deal about it.
You're right. I don't know either.
You have quite literally been here the whole time.
Yeah.
That's what's weird.
Folks, Eleanor is my partner, and she has literally been here the whole time. You may know her from such nerdy show triumphs as the Triforce Mike fan tribute. One of the voices in the Air of Mystery airplane escape room commercial from the Thanksgiving multiverse episode, and most recently, a librarian in the Call of Cthulhu Mystery Program Series 2, Episode 3.
Get off my books.
Get off my books.
That's both not the line you read in that skit, and also...
Like, I was going to take a movie line, take the noun out, replace it with books.
That line was delivered by Aaron Holland's daughter, Allison, originally. But it was get off my plane, as in the film Air Force One, you know.
Doug got it.
I know Doug. I'm not explaining it to Doug. I don't know. Honestly, I don't know who I'm explaining it to. But whoever you are, hey, thanks so much for tuning in. This show has gotten, we have veered off the rails. We've crashed into a ravine. All the passengers are drowning in the water.
I just want to do more movie quotes with, I'm getting too old for this book.
I didn't kill my book.
I don't read.
You're going deep with them Harrison Ford cuts. I love it.
That's why they call it the book, sweetheart.
I know that one. That was Temple of Doom.
Thank you.
I was just trying to conjure up a Regarding Henry quote, but I couldn't think of anything other than, like, I'm regarding books.
Okay.
Mosquito book. Mosquito coast. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, you came here for the Harrison Ford jokes, and that's why you're sticking around. But sadly, that ship has sailed.
Did any of you either see The Guns of Navarone ever?
Never. No. Never even heard of it.
The Guns of Navarone is a Gregory Peck film with David Niven and a lot of other classic actors at the time, and it's a World War II action movie that's not a war movie. It's basically what inspired Hideo Kojima to do Metal Gear.
Oh, that sounds rather important. Okay.
And it's Harrison Ford's first movie ever where he played a stuntman slash extra, and there's a scene where they steal this Nazi truck. Or they pretend they're dressed as Nazis and they're waving down the truck like, oh, help us, our truck broke down, and they're going to knock these guys out and take that truck. So they do that, and what they didn't realize is that there's still one Nazi in the back, So they're like, all right, we got these guys. We're going to tie them up. We're going to leave them here. And the Nazi in the back of the truck starts leaning out because it's like a canvas truck. So he pulls the canvas back and he like pulls his pistol out. But then they catch him and they knock him out and then he's fine. Or actually, no, I think they shoot him actually. But either way, that canvas pulls back. And as the canvas pulls back, you just sort of see like the half of the face, like the nose and eye of a baby Harrison Ford because he plays, he's a stuntman. And he's and they confirm that this is him. So this is like 1960, I want to say... 62 or 63.
Wow, that is early. That's crazy. Yeah.
No, he's like a baby.
And I didn't realize he was in Hollywood then.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if all the deals, but he did confirm that it was him because in an interview they said, "Is it true? Like this? They've been saying this is you for years, and it's this famous movie. And is it really you?" And he goes, "Yeah, it is me. And I was paid as a stuntman. And the most important part was that I landed on my face so you couldn't see my face. And sure enough, they go, ra-da-da-da! They rake it with machine guns, and he goes, blah! And he falls forward, and his hands cover up his face, like you know, buries his face in his arms in a most natural way if you're being shot.
He did his job.
He did his job, and that's why he's in Star Wars.
And man, he could hang a door.
Yeah, apparently, yeah, hang a door with the best of them.
Because he used to hang doors.
Oh.
For Francis Ford Coppola.
Okay.
Anyway, so, Nerdy Show. Wow. Here we are. It's been a time. You've no doubt heard perhaps the update with me sounding really exhausted. I went back and I listened to that and I was like, whoa, I don't sound good. we've been up to a lot of shenanigans behind the scenes. We've been alluding to a Lightning Dogs project that we're still going to allude to for just a little while longer, just a little while.
Like a few more days or is it like a week?
Maybe more like a week, because let's just say a week. But keep your eyes peeled to all Lightning Dogs feeds, including the podcast feed, for the announcement of the biggest thing we've ever done. And it's not a television series, but it is something of substance.
And it is on the way.
Yes.
Like it is if you're charting how to get to point A to point B. This is like a little, this is not A, because that's where you start, and it's not B, but it's like this thing in the middle. What would you call it?
A and a quarter.
Eb.
Or just eh.
Eh. I don't know. Anyway, it's something real, and so immediately, as soon as Cthulhu ended, which was a very much a down-to-the-wire race, far more than we ever anticipated, Then we dove right head first into this extremely complicated Lightning Dogs project. And meanwhile, there's been, you know, we all got day jobs, and one of those day jobs now incorporates Eleanor into it. Eleanor is a co-host on a new podcast over at Consequence Podcast Network, The Fifth Dimension, a Twilight Zone podcast.
Yeah. And I thought you'd let me say that, but
nice job.
I was segueing so you could elaborate on it more.
I'm just going to be the silent host over here.
I thought you were the silent host this whole time. Wasn't that the whole thing?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's right. I've been here the whole time.
Spooky.
Yeah. Just like the Twilight Zone. That's right. I'm a co-host on the Twilight Zone. Oh, shit. I'm a co-host on the Fifth Dimension. A Twilight Zone podcast for Consequence of Sound, just so everyone knows.
Do you feel cheated that you are co-hosting that podcast before you ever co-hosted this one?
I knew that this wasn't my arena.
You're not a nerd?
I know, because nerds don't think I'm cool either.
That's not
doesn't
true.
That make you, doesn't, wouldn't that make you the ultimate nerd if that
yeah,
was the case?
That's true. I'm winning nerdom.
Why don't you tell us all about RoboCop, Eleanor?
I love RoboCop. It's the perfect... representation of I can't do it.
What of 80s political whatever?
I mean, it's not the 80s, it's all come true. You know, you've got the way women are finally equal in this future, but everything still sucks. And
I'm gonna be honest, I haven't seen RoboCop in a very long time.
Oh.
And when I did see it as a kid, I really didn't care for it, so you're gonna have to actually try and sell it to me.
Oh, okay. Dead or alive, you're coming with books.
All right, no, you got me. Like, that's enough. That's dead or alive, you're coming with books.
The weird thing is, I do love RoboCop, and I saw it kind of recently again, for the fifth time or whatever. But it's about the privatization of the police force and how they start thinking, okay, well, let's automate instead of using you know,
like military overforce or whatever. Like.
Yeah. And it dehumanizes this person who then has to humanize a robot. And but it's about capitalism and how fucked that is and how everybody loses with that, except that, you know, this robot, I am losing it. I'm sorry.
Except for the Gerber company, apparently they're going to stay in business.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Cause they have to feed the robots. You are good. Yeah. But one of my favorite moments from the movie this time around, watching it this time around, was, when he saves a woman who's being attacked by two muggers.
Well, I've seen this one a million times.
Yeah, scene 27.
Yeah.
We all know scene 27.
Where he says, Madam, you've experienced a traumatic event. I'm calling a rape crisis hotline or whatever. And I loved it because it's so appropriate, because you still have that inclination of, oh, he saved her. And then, you know, you get reminded that that's not really the appropriate response. And, you know, even now, it's still a great reminder that we suck at how we deal with
all that shit,
traumatic events, especially handling.
I don't want to see RoboCop and feel like a downer. I want to be reminded of how shitty everything is.
Oh, well, that's what it is.
I guess that was my problem. You know, you know what my real actual problem was? My first RoboCop thing was playing RoboCop versus Terminator on the Sega Genesis.
And I didn't know that was a thing. It's not nerdy enough.
What? What? There. So, like, I grew up watching Terminator, and that, you know, those movies are flawless. So, you know, say what you want. Everybody likes those movies. But there was this Sega Genesis game called RoboCop versus Terminator, and I only knew about RoboCop from, like, peripheral stuff, like Dead or Alive coming with me, and he had the gun in his leg and whatever. And I'm like, this is going to be the most awesome game that ever existed. RoboCop versus Terminator. Let's do it. And you put it in, and it's like, you know, it starts like RoboCop, where it's like, what year does RoboCop take place? It's like 20 something something.
I mean, yes, it is 20 something something, but so is everything.
20XX, whatever. It starts that way, and it's like in Detroit, blah, 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 blah. And the opening scroll, it's like, you know, Skynet sends Terminator back through time to kill another future leader of the whatever. Like, oh, this is it. Here we go. And then you're playing as RoboCop, and you're just running through the streets of Detroit shooting other Terminators so that they stop doing whatever they're doing. And I'm like, I want to play the Terminator. I thought this was Terminator versus RoboCop, not RoboCop mows down a million Terminators. And that's basically what it was.
Oh.
And so I was super disappointed as a kid, but...
I mean, that game is off-brand for both franchises and should never exist. It's no AVP. Like,
no, but man, dude, if you said, Mr. Banks, we're thinking about remaking RoboCop versus Terminator, the video game, what would you recommend? I got a billion ideas now. Like, there's so many things you could do with it, even though I'm not as familiar with RoboCop, but I'm at least more now than I did when I played the original video game.
Uh-huh.
But no, so many awesome things you could do.
So, well, don't leave us in suspense.
First, pick who you want to play as. That's first thing. You're going to be Terminator or you're going to be RoboCop. And you have to make it like a buddy cop movie where they have to team up at the end, because you have to have the good Terminator. You know what I'm saying? Because people want, you know, you can have the bad Terminator that comes through time, got to kill whoever. So they got to send back the Arnold Terminator. And of course, RoboCop is chasing that Terminator, thinking that's the one that's out there and after him. And then you
don't
have
understand.
The robot fight. Yeah. And then you can have the Rock'em
Sock'em. I'm a cop, you idiot.
Then you got to have the Rock'em Sock'em fight between these two clunky robots. Meanwhile, the T-1000 is like doing whatever. And of course, RoboCop can't track the T-1000 because he doesn't understand how it works. But he can definitely see that this Terminator is like a robot like him. There's so many cool things like that. You could do, dude, co-op. You tell me you wouldn't do a co-op, buddy cop, RoboCop Terminator game?
Was that game never in arcades?
Nope.
Weird. What a weird fucking game. Like, who was there? I don't understand. I never had a Genesis, so I never played it. But, like, I don't know what to do with that game.
You can look up, like, playthroughs online. And it looks okay as a game, like, the look of it. But we're getting way off topic, but well, not that there was one.
There isn't a topic. Just, we've gone full topicless nerdy show.
No, ooh, but...
Topicless.
Yeah. Back when they were doing crazy shit with video games that they're not doing anymore.
Well, yeah.
Well, I'm just sitting here thinking about how Robert Patrick has beautiful blue eyes and Peter Weller has beautiful blue eyes, and they're two of the few who have blue eyes and aren't fucking creepy.
Spoken as someone who has blue eyes, do you believe that you or yourself are creepy?
I can't look in the mirror.
Am I creepy?
Sometimes, yeah.
Am I creepy? I got blue eyes.
Do you?
You know me for how long? Like, you're sitting across from me. I was like, kind of dim, I guess. Like,
I just so rarely stare into your eyes. But I'll start now.
Yeah, look, in this blue. They're blue.
They're beautiful.
Are we
I got to get out of here.
What color? Cab, it's not. Is it blue or is it? What is it?
What? Who's me?
I can't tell right now. Yeah.
Oh. They're blue. They're blue.
They're bluish?
Yeah.
I just thought they were really pale. I couldn't tell if they were like blue or if they were like lighter.
Yeah, they don't like the sun. I'll tell you that much.
Okay, well, I don't like the sun either. Like, and that's just not even having to do with my eyes.
Well, the rest of my body likes the sun.
That's
kind
the vampirism.
Anyway,
I don't think it does. But
well, I mean, not no. I mean, like it likes it. It's a dangerous relationship where mm-hmm. I have to take precautions. You know, yeah. Sometimes you're in a relationship where you have to take precautions, Eleanor.
I wouldn't know.
I think the takeaway here is if you make a video game for children that's based on two rated R films, it's not going to sell that well.
Well, let's not do that again.
Well, but
then.
But RoboCop at the time had an animated series.
Did it?
And a line of action figures.
Yep, that's true.
Where have I been?
This is all in the wake of RoboCop 3, which we've intentionally avoided.
That's right. Yeah. But
RoboCop is great, Doug.
RoboCop deals with capitalism, sexism, automation, futurism, classism, drugs, mean guys.
I mean, he's a cop, so I hope so. Like,
guns,
at some point, yeah.
You know,
scary emotions.
It, yeah, and it deals with all the major issues: advertising.
I'd buy that for a dollar.
Privatization. It's like in the future, the hospitals are privatized, and then the police force is privatized, and it's like, oh fuck. And it starts with the prisons, and it's like, yeah,
you know, maybe I'd appreciate it on a better level now, as the same way when we watched Gremlins 2 recently. Mm-hmm. Or I rewatched Gremlins 2 recently. Cap was seeing it for the first time, and
I know out there, yeah. I know. But it's okay, I've seen them all now.
Yeah, well, that, yeah, we're all caught up.
And Gremlins 2 is a vision. It's one of the greatest films ever made,
and I liked it as a kid because it was cartoony and gremlins are being crazy. But as an adult now, I was seeing it for the first time as an adult. And then all of the shit that's in there, it was like they straight up predicted like a lot of stuff that was very surprising, which I guess we'll have to save for another episode or whatever. Did we record something for that? Or that was just for funsies. We just watched it for fun.
Yeah, well, yes. We watched it for fun, wink. But yeah, we maybe should keep our mouths shut about Gremlins because that is a business project.
Okay, I guess so. Sorry. But the point being is that you can either cut this out or leave it. I'll leave it up to you.
I'm not sure if I'm editing this at all because I have no spare time.
But like in Gremlins 2, I watched it again recently as an adult, and there's a lot of stuff in there that's political and like capitalist stuff that I'm just like, they were saying this shit back then? That's surprising. So maybe that's why RoboCop is worth another look for me.
Yeah, it's annoyingly relevant.
Yeah.
It really shouldn't be, but it is.
I mean, they both have Dark Deco corporate architecture in them.
Yeah.
There are some very poignant socio-political observations happening in unexpected places when these films are being made in the late 80s and early 90s. And boy, Gremlins 2 is not, it's not a joke. It's not a joke. I mean,
it is funny.
It's funny, but it's like, but it is brilliant satire.
It is not lazy.
No, it's one of the most self-aware movies ever made. The Key and Peele sketch really like, that was legitimately my idea of what Gremlins 2 was for my entire life. But the reality is when you see all that insane shit happening at the same time, it's all extremely calculated.
Yeah.
But still a good skit.
Oh,
yeah. Great skit. Mm-hmm. Hey, speaking of Jordan Peele,
yeah.
why don't you explain a little bit more about what you do over at the Fifth Dimension?
Okay. Jordan Peele has brought Twilight Zone to the forefront of our awareness again by reviving the series. And he's doing a really fantastic job of making great TV.
I'm glad to hear that because I was really... Because I'm a huge fan of the original Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
So for like... I knew next to nothing about what they were going to be doing with it. So like, have you seen, how many episodes have you seen of the new one?
I've only seen three, but I've enjoyed them all in varying degrees. It's different for sure. For starters, they're an hour long, and most of the original ones are a half hour. Except
wow. Season four.
Yeah, except season four. And I was watching season four recently, and they sort of both suffer from the same problems with longer episodes where you have time to go through all the possible theories, so you're more likely to come up with an idea of what might be going on.
About halfway through it.
Yeah. And it's a little bit slower, but then it also means that you get to, especially with the Jordan Peele version, you get to create really beautiful scenes, and it's like you're in a movie, and it's good. He did a good job.
What would you, now, I don't have this opinion, but what would you say to someone who's just like, oh, they're only making Twilight Zone because Black Mirror is popular, and now they're just trying to be like, Black Mirror is the true modern Twilight Zone. What's the new Twilight Zone going to actually do that's Twilight Zone-y and not just
they're pretty,
weird show?
They're pretty different. I mean, they're extremely different. Black Mirror is almost always about technology. It's almost always about not trusting technology. Mm-hmm. And Twilight Zone, especially for me, it's about not trusting the people behind the technology. But Jordan Peele's versions, or the episodes that I've seen, have a lot more societal commentary. The last episode that I watched was episode 3.
Replay,
which was almost entirely sprung from the Black Lives Matter movement. So there's a lot more social commentary in that. It's not just technological. It's almost not.
Which is in line with the original show, too.
Also, the presence of any kind of like metaphysical happenings whatsoever, the unexplainable does take place, which is not something that normally happens in Black Mirror, Choose Your Own Adventure episode aside.
And I love Black Mirror, but they're different things and they're both really good.
Cool.
Also, I suppose it should be noted that that this series is on CBS All Access, the same platform that has Star Trek Discovery, so it is behind a paywall. But it also is a very strong argument for ponying up some cash, because
it's good.
It's good.
Yeah.
How do you feel about Jordan Peele as the host? And I only say that because every time I see Jordan Peele...
You mean the narrator?
As the narrator. Because every time I see a commercial with him in it, and he's like trying to be like, this is going to be the Twilight Zone. It just looks like he's smiling, and I know it's me projecting onto whatever he's doing, because he's probably doing a great job. But every time I see him in brief glimpses, I'm always projecting this thing of like, oh, he's about to make a punchline here, because I'm so used to them pulling that hard right turn on Key and Peele, where it's like serious skit, and then then halfway through, suddenly it's a joke because the zombies are afraid of black people, or you know, or whatever. And there, he was so good at getting that tone and then making it funny that I keep expecting the punchline, if that makes sense.
Well, there kind of is a punchline. It's just a lot subtler. You know, he knows he's funny. He knows he can't help but be funny, I think. The first episode that I saw was The Comedian, which is the second one to air. Air in quotes.
But the first two episodes both aired came out
simultaneously.
The same day.
Yeah. So on that one, it's so melodramatic that you're like, oh, this isn't going to work. This is ridiculous. But in both the other episodes that I've seen, it was very natural and it really did work. I mean, he clearly loves it. And I think that he knows that it's a weird trope to have him come in and say,
oh, he's about to find out.
I'm setting the scene.
Yeah.
And I know something you don't know.
Okay. Well, I never had any doubt that he was a huge fan, because it clearly showed even in other things that he did. But it was just the idea of, like, can he carry it as a host? I know he's got the talent, but will the audience go with it in a serious way with him attached was the concern, I think.
In The Comedian intro, he really does raise an eyebrow, literally. Mm. And it's like, oh, I getcha. Or maybe I don't. I don't know. But yeah, he does a great job. And there are little nods in the new series to the old series where it's kind of like, yeah, I'm a fan too. So we're in this together. Let's do some new stories.
Cool.
Yeah, it's good.
Because like my with Rod Serling being such a staple of it, he's even kind of creepy when he's not being creepy. Like even at the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror, it's not even his voice. It's an impersonator. But the fact that he's there in the suit and he's like, behind this elevator door. And someone's just doing their best Rod Serling impression. And I still get freaked out.
Well, I saw a skit recently that he did.
Jack Benny.
Was it Jack Benny?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Where he's.
It's Rod Serling in Jack Benny.
Right. I've seen some of that. Yeah.
And Jack Benny goes into a Twilight Zone episode, and Rod Serling's there, and he's just being a kind of normal guy. And I was thinking, oh, you don't really talk like that.
Yeah, no.
This is so weird. You were probably a great guy to hang out with.
The weird thing, there's this really cool interview with him.
It's a pretty mouth you've got.
Okay.
There's an interview with Mike Wallace where Mike Wallace is interviewing Rod Serling before the Twilight Zone.
Wants my body.
It's before Twilight Zone hits the air. And I'll have to find it and I'll link it to you because it's really interesting. But I don't know how much of it is naturally how the cadence of his voice. But even when Mike Wallace is like, so tell us about this new show, The Twilight Zone. He's like, well, it's an investigation into this. And he's not putting on airs. It's just kind of like, he's just clearly very passionate about it. And he just like really has such a sharp mind about what he wants to say with it that he's like eager to talk about it. So it just sort of. It's not a very natural thing because it is promoting the show, but he doesn't slip into the narrator, but it clearly came from him is what I'm saying. It's like when you watch him get into that mode when he's just, I'm just so excited for the show, Mike. It's going to be great. You're going to love it. It's like, it's really cool to see it happen. I'll have to find it.
There are some words that he just says hilariously, like smoking, robots.
Smoking looks so fucking cool.
But that's
because he makes it look cool.
He doesn't take a drag. He just holds a cigarette.
Yeah. I'm talking even the mic. Wow, he's puffing away. In the interview or whatever. He just makes it look great.
It's a filthy habit.
Yeah. Boy, times have changed.
But you're right. He does say some funny words.
Yeah. Like robots.
Yeah, robots.
There was one in the Jack Benny, too, but I don't remember.
There was. What was it? Oh, it was so strange. But it's like, it's weird. It's weird. It's weird how someone who has such calculation about the way that they enunciate their words.
He must know. He sounds silly.
Like when I saw First Man, and everyone in First Man was calling it the Gemini.
Oh.
The Gemini program. I heard you're going to go fly on Gemini. It's like, yeah, I think I might. You know, it's just like, Gemini, yeah, whatever. It's like there's Mercury, there's Apollo, and there's Gemini. It's just so weird.
That is weird.
That's what they called it at the time. You can hear it in interviews. That's how they said it.
Is it because everybody was from Texas or something? Or?
I guess. You know, I mean.
You're from the Space Coast. Where's Neil Armstrong from?
I don't remember. I know
they
Buzz
don't teach you this in school.
Buzz Aldrin's from Ohio. And I know. I remember
Ohio.
That.
Ohio.
Because they point out. Ohio.
Ohio gozaimasu.
Because they say if you're born in Ohio. I don't remember the exact number, but the chances of you becoming an astronaut are significantly higher than if you're born in any other state.
Oh, man.
And it's there's no reason. It just happened to be that way. And it's in my own head.
Because they got rock fuel in their water.
Yeah.
There's got to be a reason.
I just think if you're a child growing up in Ohio and you live on a farm and all you see is a big sky above you every night, like, I get the fuck out of here. Yeah. Like, it's like there's something about it. It's like. I don't know. Texas? Nah, it's not good enough. Still too much like Ohio. It's like Florida? Nah, too much like Ohio, even though it's not really. And it's like, well, in both those places, you can go up and get out of here. It just seems to make sense.
Yeah, I think you're right. But there must be a reason. There must be either like something in the schools or maybe there's more of a flying community.
I think you really hit it there because I think there's an aviation thing going on. Like, because you don't just apply for astronaut, like you have to have something, and if you go to like MIT,
That's the right stuff, I believe.
Yeah, you have to have the right stuff, and it's you have to have an education, and you have to you have to have a lot of piloting experience, especially for the early astronauts. It was a lot of test pilots that they wanted, so a lot of them came out of that neck of the woods, I guess.
So I ended up at Kennedy Space Center at least once a year these days, which is weird. It's expensive, but it's always, 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 always worth it. And it was really special because I got to go there with an old friend and his very young child. And seeing them both reacting to things like seeing the Saturn V rocket in person and the reveal of like having that. They do this whole dramatization where you're in the actual like launch control room, which is probably not the name of it. And reenacting the moment of the first like launch of the Saturn V rocket and all that. It's very powerful. It's like there's a lot of, they know how to stage their exhibits. Like, no, that's far better than any theme park can ever do is what they do there. Their reveal of the space shuttle Atlantis, they make you go through this whole like history thing. You're like, come on, just show me the spaceship already. But then they do it and you're like, whoa. Wow. How did this is crazy. Like, it really, so it's amazing, and experiencing it through that was special. But that's really an aside to how many times I inevitably see the John Kennedy speech of, we're going to go to the moon and do the other things.
Yeah.
And, which I always get so hung up on, what are the other things?
Did we get to those?
Not because they are easy, but because
hard. Okay, I'll tell you what the other things are, because he says it earlier in the speech.
Yeah.
Does he?
He does. He says it's, he lays out the idea of why going to the moon is crazy. And it's because I can't remember it verbatim, but he says something along the lines of, we have to build a machine that has an accuracy better than the finest Swiss watch. We have to use alloys that can withstand the heat of reentry and the heat of radiation. Many of these metals have not yet been invented. And we have to do, and like, you're like, what the, okay, wait. We're going to make a new metal? What the fuck are you talking about, JFK? We have to make a rocket that's that big that runs better than the finest watch that's available? Are you out of your mind? And he says all these impossible things. And so then he says, we choose to go to the moon and do these other things, which all sound equally crazy.
Okay, that makes a lot more sense, and also shatters everything that I was thinking, which is he inspired in me perhaps like some kind of like erotic comedy.
No, but okay.
Because you it's called The Other Things.
Yeah.
And you go to the moon and you do the other things.
Like
you
playing golf on the moon. We will do those other things.
No. The other things are moon people. Because like, this is inspired in part by a film that we all know and love. It's called Nude on the Moon, which is a nudist exploitation film filmed in the beautiful
Nudovision.
Beautiful Nudovision. It's filmed at Coral Castle in Miami, a really incredible occult oriented roadside attraction, which I can't recommend enough. It's incredible. But Nude on the Moon is this very cheesy titty film made in the 1950s.
A cheesy titty film?
Oh, yeah. There's cheese and there's titties. Moon cheese. Mostly moon cheese.
There you go. Perfect. Okay, you brought it back.
So, I mean, and it's just boobs. Like, that's all. It's like you get like maybe 20 minutes of establishment of two fine white gentlemen smoking pipes in a laboratory, and then they go to some other planet and encounter strange, exotic, topless Amazons.
Like, jeez, Gromit.
It's ridiculous. But anyway, so we should go to the moon, and JFK personally goes to the moon, and as he is wont to do, has to make handsome 1960s JFK love to the other things, not because they are easy, but because he is hard.
Oh, God.
Wasn't this a Muppets skit?
The Kuzbanians?
Yeah.
I will say, you talking about going to the moon and it being like this weird, surreal thing, remind me that I am a subscriber to the Criterion Channel.
Thank you for your service.
Yeah, because once Filmstruck was gone, I was like, shit, I can't, like, I slept too long on Filmstruck. I gotta hop on. I can't let it happen again. So I subscribed to the Criterion Channel, and until it launches, they're doing like one movie a week. Mm-hmm. And they released one last week, and it was called The Fabulous Baron Munchausen.
And it's a different Baron Munchausen than this is the
one.
With.
This is the one that inspired Terry Gilliam.
Interesting,
because it is a surrealist film.
Ah.
And I'd never heard of it. I didn't know anything about it. Not only did it inspire Terry Gilliam, but it inspired like a host of like a million other things, right? And there's a whole list. Like when you go on Criterion, it tells you all the people that say that they credit this film as like something that inspired it. It's like a Czech film. It's like from Czechoslovakia. And let's see. I want to get the year right, because it was made in 1962. But they film it as if it's a silent movie. Like there's voices, there's audio, there's everything. But the framing of it and the staging of it, you know, like on really old silent movies, they'll tint the whole thing blue when it's night.
Yeah.
And they'll tint the whole thing yellow when you're in the desert. Same thing. So it's like, dude, they didn't list George Miller as an inspiration, but it totally fucking is. Like the last name any great surrealist thing or any great heavy like vista viewing thing. And it really comes back to this. I'd never heard of it before, but I sat down and I watched it. And we kind of have to watch it, like, because it's so surreal, weird, and kooky.
Yeah, twist my arm. You said all the magic words for me.
And because the way it begins, remember, they filmed this in 1962 in Czechoslovakia. The movie begins with a moon landing mission. So they clearly it's been on everyone's minds, you know, to go to the moon, go to the moon, go to the moon. And they show, like, a rocket landing on the moon, and spacemen get out. And they're like, you know, looking around, you know, there's no speech or nothing because it's just the opening of the movie. But the astronaut looks down. And he sees footprints that are already there.
Ah.
and he sees like a handkerchief, and he sees like an old gramophone, like whatever, and he's like, "What the fuck?" And he's got this look, and he keeps walking up the path, and you see this guy up on the hill, being, "Hello, hello there!" And he's like, "And this what the fuck?" And it's this guy on the moon, and he waves him over, and it's Cyrano de Bergerac. He's like, "Thank you for joining us on the moon on this pleasant day. You must be a moon man. That's why you're wearing that strange outfit." And this guy is like, he's lost his mind. Like, what the fuck is happening? And it's not just Cyrano de Bergerac. It's like three other really famous people. And they're like, "Where's our host? Our host? There he is on the crest above there. Baron Munchausen." And he comes like riding down on a horse. They have this like table laid out for dinner. And this astronaut's like, "Well, I've gone bonkers, but fuck it." And he just starts sitting there talking with them. And they're like, "Let's cut up some fine food and whatever." And you're like, "Where the fuck is this going? Because they're on the moon. And is this the 60s? What is this?" And Baron Munchausen is like, "Oh, this moon man, he's not eating. He's not partaking the food because of that helmet on his head. What if we remove it?" And they go, "Perhaps he can't. Perhaps he needs it to breathe. That would make sense because he lives on the moon." And it's like, it's so crazy. Anyway, the point is, they decide to put this dude on a boat, take him back to Earth, and show him what life is like on Earth with Earth people, because he doesn't know, because he's a moon man. And he's just going with it, because he doesn't understand what's happening to him. And what follows is a series of misadventures with weird giant cardboard cutouts, animated horses, animated flying dolphins in the sky. It's so fucking out there, but it is amazing. And
wow.
And not in a way that's so weird that it like makes you like feel like isolated. It doesn't make you feel weird for watching it, because there's always a story.
Well,
and
it
always
sounds
something
like an
happening.
Episode of Adventure Time.
It is exactly an Adventure Time episode. You've totally got it. That's exactly what it is. It is an Adventure Time episode where a normal human person stepped into Adventure Time, and Finn and Jake are like, "Hey, dude, what's up? Come with us. We're going to the moon today." And it's like that exactly. No, perfect.
Sounds like a hipster wet dream.
No, this sounds like new wave cinema.
No, this is something that hipsters would watch and be like, "I totally enjoyed that." And if they kind of didn't, I legitimately like love this movie. And like, it's like, I can't wait to watch it again.
I'm disappointed that I've only seen Munchausen by proxy.
Like with a Terry Gilliam one or whatever. This was the first Baron Munchausen thing that I've like really seen. And I haven't seen the Terry Gilliam one, but this made me want to see the Terry Gilliam one.
It's amazing. I mean, he's always got third act structure issues generally, but it's fantastic. I mean, it's the most expensive movie ever made in Europe for like two decades or so. So, you know, I mean, that doesn't make it good, but whoa, the scale.
And because this was done in 1962, you know, you forget that it was done in 1962 because it feels timeless. I don't know if that was their aim, but that's what it is now. It's so bizarre. But when you see it, you'll know what I'm talking about.
That's cool. That's very cool. Well, let me take this moment to thank you fine folks for listening and for continuing to be with us on our journeys, no matter how strange a diversion they might be. Much like going to the moon and then being escorted back to Earth, I feel like we're not out to take advantage of you, fine listeners. We're just, we know that you, listening, are most likely the individuals who have been with us the longest and trust us the most. And we're not wanting to take advantage of that trust. It's simply that you know that we're involved in some serious stuff. So thank you for your patience. Thank you for your trust. And also very much thank you for your support, because if it wasn't for you funding us on Patreon, we would not be able to do anything that we do. Most of all, the extremely expensive and time-consuming projects that are now consuming our lives for the better, such as the Call of Cthulhu Mystery Program and Star Wreck, which is very much back in production now. I've just heard the first score from Star Wreck this morning. Things are coming along, and if everything goes according to plan, we will have a Star Wreck miniseries before Cthulhu returns later this year. Now, if you're wondering, what is Star Wreck? Star Wreck is a project that was kicked off via fan funding many, many years ago and fell into production hell, mostly just because we got sidetracked with a bunch of other stuff.
Cthulhu threatened to swallow it whole.
Yeah, well, that happened too. It is a Star Trek parody, as is plainly evident, but based on weirdly a European Star Trek parody dating back to the early 90s, when it was a very rudimentary computer animation that then became a live action series that then went on to the people who made this weird fan series for this very strange parody of Star Trek went on to do Iron Sky, the space Nazi movie. So anyway, we're doing our own variation on their world in our own Star Wreck, and it will be out later. We don't have any dates yet, but bear with us. It's underway. Also forthcoming is the Call of Cthulhu Q&A, which is accepting listener questions. We really, really hope that you'll join in and ask questions of the cast and crew. Submissions are due by April 18th. You can email cthulhu@nerdyshow.com. Then the episode will come out as soon as we're able after that.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
But if you dig what we do, all these productions cost money. We're doing everything we can to pay the creatives who are involved in them. Sometimes not much, sometimes not at all, but if we're able to, we do pay out, which is something that a lot of people aren't able to do. And we want to make sure that we not just create fine quality products, but also compensate everyone for their time as needed. And also, we're struggling we generally aren't able to compensate ourselves. The money that comes in from to Patreon that helps fund the Nerdy Show Network is basically at this point bare bones operational costs. The more money we make, the more money we can spend on helping our other series to grow and continuing to build things. Call of Cthulhu Mystery Program cost over $4,000 to make in this last series. No small thing. So the more you can help us, the better. Now, I say that, and I'm so very happy to say that the Call of Cthulhu Mystery Program has, in fact, brought in a lot of new patrons and a lot of new listeners in general. It's been quite well received. It was even number 6 and number 7 on the Apple Podcast literature charts for a couple days. It's not a huge success by any stretch just yet, but that alone is quite good. And this is all thanks to you fine folks who have funded us all this time and trusted us to make something incredible. People have said wonderful things, and I'm so very grateful because this project was an ordeal. As both of you who've been like on the outskirts of this project can probably attest.
Yes. I wish it all the success, but I wouldn't wish you to go through that same process again. It would have to be a little different.
I really enjoyed the experience, challenging though it was, but yeah, been pretty wiped out. Haven't quite recovered. but I want to welcome with all my heart, brand new patrons, Harrow X, Daniel Wimes, B. Smith, Jangasar, Enternaut, Christopher Nitkin, Kim Malicha, Nathaniel Westcott, and a brand new executive producer of the Nerdy Show Network.
Oh, shit.
That's someone giving $50 a month. No small thing here. Please welcome the incredible Marcus Larson.
Wow. Seriously, thanks to all of you so
yes.
much. Thank you.
It really does mean a lot. We're doing what we can to make sure that Patreon is as rewarding as possible. We do have over 30 minutes of bonus content for the Call of Cthulhu Mystery Program that's recently gone out to patrons of $5 or more. Something you should know is that we've been speaking with Patreon recently and discussing some best practices, and we may need to raise the default perk from $1 to $2 because credit card, for every transaction, there are credit card transaction fees. and the amount of money that we get from a $1 patron, we always say like every dollar makes a difference, and it does, but it only makes about like 30 cents of difference. Like it's not a dollar isn't really a dollar. So $2 is, however, like actually
a dollar.
Yeah, or a little bit more, but it's tricky. There's some credit card transaction stuff. I want to get all my ducks in a row. I need to have another meeting with Patreon, and before I do anything, I'm going to be communicating clearly to all of you about the repercussions of it and so on and so forth. It might be a necessary thing. I mean, they would know. They've kind of built the website. But also we have a new TeePublic store. We still have shirts listed on Amazon, but there's a lot more products that are available with our designs at TeePublic. TeePublic is kind of like, it's run better. It's also not Amazon. And there's plenty of reasons to have problems with Amazon. We have brand new Cthulhu t-shirt designs up there, and also patrons over $5 get varying degrees of discounts on our TeePublic store. So that's another thing that we're adding. We're seeing what we can do, what we can get away with, what we can budget time for. But we thank all of you so much for being with us on this journey. Also, back in the day, we had a lot of fun on the Nerdy Show forums. But the forums, they got dusty. They've fallen out of vogue. And now everyone's on Discord.
And there's plenty of robots on the forums every now and then.
Yeah, that is the thing that happened. We do get invaded by robots quite often. Now, I'm not a huge fan of Discord, but I've gotten the hang of it. And I'm on it right now. And in the past week, we've injected a surprising amount of energy into our Discord. It's bumping. Yeah. It's really,
and
like,
you've been more active on it in the past few days than ever.
I mean,
and that's not much, but I've taken notice.
Well, I'm trying to turn over a new leaf, and like I love interacting with everybody, and it's something, you know, we used to do it on the forums all the time, and it stopped.
You're saying, much like Ariel, you want to be where the people are.
Yeah.
And if the people are on Discord, that's where you'll be.
I want to see them typing. Fapping along to that. What's that word again? Oh, erotica.
Does Nerdy Show have a channel of that?
There's an NSFW channel.
Okay, well, I'm usually at work,
so I can't.
If
you would
check
like
it.
To learn what is my favorite pornographic webcomic, you may.
Oh, gosh.
Nerd on the Moon? It doesn't work.
Nerd on the Moon. And do the other things.
We'll do all the other things. End that segment. Now on to the next segment.
Nude on the Moon 2, The Other Things.
Oh shit. that could maybe go well in my little pantheon of unnecessary sequels that
Indiegogo.
I've decided to make.
Indiegogo.
Like the spiritual sequel to Carrot Top's film Chairman of the Board, Surf's Up, but it's about medieval surfs. I've talked about it on the show before. And what was the other one? Oh, there's a Predator film that I pitched. Predator Gone Native.
Oh, I forgot about that one. Damn, that was a long time ago.
Yeah. I couldn't tell you what episode to go back and listen to these, but I won't repeat it. But maybe someday we're trying to do. Okay, so here's another little bit of housekeeping. Nerdy Show Theater has become Multiverse Theater. We're rebranding. Nerdy Show Theater wasn't a particularly good name to begin with, and we want to do more with Multiverse Theater as a standalone, like, anthology series, much like The Twilight Zone. It can be lots of things. It can be a repository for shows like Star Wreck. That is where Star Wreck will live. That is where Paranoia XP lives right now, as well as the Wicked Anime RPG one-shots. However, it's also where Nerdcasting the Multiverse lives, and I do plan on bringing back Nerdcasting the Multiverse in some capacity as soon as I'm able in a brand new format, and it won't be called Nerdcasting the Multiverse. I think it's going to be called I Trawl the Multiverse. I have kind of a plot thing built out, and there's a lot of Twilight Zone that's being imbued into the program. But anyway, that's a story for another time. However, if you haven't, you should definitely follow Multiverse Theater. That's where Star Wreck will be waiting for you at some time in the future. I'm tired of talking. Someone else talk.
I was trying to think of a good movie line and put book in there. With a
I'm like, too old for this book.
Yeah, these books are making me thirsty, but that was a Seinfeld quote. Did I talk about DB Cooper? No, I'm like, I guess I
even. No, no,
no, first of all, I'm not going to do it. You haven't. Yeah. And that's a huge conversation, and Laval would be so mad if he wasn't here for it.
He would, yeah, so I'm going to have to save it.
But now you can tell him that we talked about it.
Yes, that we mentioned it. He will get so mad.
I mean, I've been talking all day. I'm legitimately tired of talking, so maybe we should wrap it up. But there's a couple, I suppose, a couple loose ends that...
Yeah, and I know that you're tired of talking, but you did want to give everyone a personal update.
Yeah. There's a couple things. Last All Caps episode I did was late last year, if I remember correctly, and I had a little cat named Sorsha, and she was not eating and not drinking, and I talked about that and about kitten fostering, which is something that Eleanor and I do together, and it's very nice. And the good news is that Sorsha's fine. She bounced back a couple days after that recording and started eating after being force-fed quite a bit, and also fed, what was it, some kind of an antihistamine, which is normally to prevent itching, of course, but also apparently provokes appetite.
Apparently they give it to people for vertigo, but yeah, I have no idea what it was.
Interesting.
But that bet. Thanks, Dr. Ed.
So she bounced back and she's wonderful and so good. And
so hungry for food.
So hungry. Yeah, she eats everything now. She is all up in our business when we're eating. It's amazing. So yeah, she's in our lives full time now. We did what they call a foster fail, and we did not relinquish her back to the Orange County Animal Services. We have kept her on in our home. She's really sweet, and I thought you might want to know that in case you were invested in the life of this poor dying kitten. But she really was at the time.
She
was. It
was
very scary.
Yeah. It was a close call.
Yeah.
Fading kitten syndrome.
Yeah, fading kitten syndrome.
It's the saddest named disease ever.
I didn't know that was a real thing.
It is, yeah. I mean, it's kind of general, but yeah. It's the way kittens sometimes have such weak immune systems. They just die.
I thought it was like when cat pulls it back to the future and they start fading away.
Yeah, like, that's what it sounds like. Cats. It's like when I heard the term, I was... you know, in the emotional throes of this, and there was still a part of me that went, that's a funny name.
Yeah, that's but not, that doesn't help the situation
no,
at all when you're in it. No.
Yeah, and it's a funny name that made me cry to think about it.
It's like whooping cough. It's like, I know it's serious, but whooping cough?
Hello, I'm Dr. Whooping Cough.
Oh, you've got the whooping cough. It's like,
it's named after me. I discovered it.
In order to get your posture correct, you have to sit on the whooping cushion. It's like, the what? Is it? Am I a fucking joke to you? This is serious. No. This is how you fix it.
Scares the whoop right out of you.
Scares the whoop. Then you sit down, and it is a whoopee cushion, and then he laughs. He goes, don't you feel better now? No, you've embarrassed me. You're the worst doctor ever.
This terrible skit reminds me that we should all congratulate Tony Baldini and Stacey Baldini on the birth of their child.
This reminds you.
Please welcome Miles
Baby
Baldini.
Whooping. Oh.
Baby Baldini into the world. Tony is now a dad, and as he has said ad nauseum, finally, my career of telling dad jokes will pay off. Ugh.
Not for that kid.
You don't know me, Dad! So that's really good. And the other thing is, and this is, I mean, I just haven't been communicating quite an awful bit lately on the show, but... if you've been following in the Caps transition saga, which has not been particularly well chronicled here on Nerdy Show, I was using they, their pronouns for quite some time, a number of years, but now am all up in that she, her business. So those are my pronouns now. I am a non-binary woman, and life is so much better.
You could say I'm also all up in that she, her business, but in a totally different context.
I mean, five. That too.
Across the table. But I know what you mean. That's what I'm saying. I'm clarifying. I'm up in that she, her business too, but not in the same way. But I agree. I know what you mean.
Are you? Is there anything you want to talk about?
No.
Okay.
No, there's nothing to report. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I mean, I just thought you were maybe, you know, doing Wingman.
Oh, no.
The
no.
series I want you to be on.
Like, do you want me to be the lackey to...
to spell? No, I want you guys
explain what this is.
Yeah, please pitch Wingman.
you, Doug Banks, recently single, mm-hmm. to move out to California to start your Hollywood career, mm-hmm. and you know, be roommates or best friends or something with Matt Spill, who's in Hollywood starting his Hollywood career, and is famously in the Forever Alone zone.
So that's how you pitched it to me. Is like, oh, you need to be the side character to a Forever Alone comedy. I'm like, what?
No.
What are you?
No.
Why are you casting me in this part?
You're both the side character.
That is the main character.
You're equally pathetic.
The city. You should have said the city. Oh. L.A. Look, L.A. is the character.
It's a buddy cop thing. If you have two men doing some kind of bro thing together, Eleanor's eyes get huge. And she's like, buddies. Boys being buddies together.
Like, just like when they care about each other.
Yeah, that's why she, like, regular show is her Cartoon Network series and everything else is garbage.
And playing with the boys is a theme song.
I mean, I wasn't going to take it a gay direction, but if you want to, sure.
I wasn't either, but apparently that's a mid-season plot twist.
What a twist.
Oh, yeah.
And they're you know, turns out the wingmen, they were wingmaning each other so much. He's so good, man. Look at him. He's fucking beautiful. Look at him. He's so fucking funny. Well, why don't you appreciate him?
I didn't want it
to
be...
Let's blow this pop stand. Get out of here. These chicks don't understand.
I didn't want it to be Top Gun, the TV show.
Right.
But apparently that's what you want, so.
Yeah. Hello, I'm a Hollywood producer. Did you just say Top Gun, the TV show? Oh, boy.
I just feel like you nice boys could just get a lot of pussy.
First time anyone ever said that to me.
That's some rock solid, like, that's some good momming right there, Eleanor.
That's done more for my ego than 20 years of academic study.
That's surprising. Because pickup line involving books.
Yeah. Frankly, my dear, I don't give a book.
That's not a pickup line.
No, that's a goodbye line. I fucked that up. I'm sorry. It's late. We're all tired.
Yeah, we're all really tired. My face hurts.
It's killing me.
Anyway,
Someone's got to do the Tony jokes when Tony's not here.
I've been making a lot of recordings when it's late at night and I'm very tired and overworked, and I want that to stop, but I don't know if it's gonna for a while. But anyway, I'm just saying, like, we should wrap it because I don't want to get any more tired than this.
Delirium show.
Bring back Nerdy Show After Dark, and it's just delirium.
Should we wrap it like Tony didn't? And that's why he has a baby name?
Oh! Now, hey, Eleanor, why haven't you been on one of these shows before?
Because I'm shy, yeah. And I have a weird voice, and I'm not nerdy enough.
I don't believe that.
All right. Well, here I am.
Hosting a podcast about Twilight Zone. That's pretty freaking nerdy.
It's true. Yeah. I mean, but who doesn't love Twilight Zone?
Some people.
Yeah.
The Straits.
Oh. Dire Straits?
Yeah. Like Mark Knopfler, he's really not a fan of the Twilight Zone.
I do not believe that.
No, I think Mark Knopfler's all over the Twilight Zone.
He's like, hey, did you see the new episode? Love that Jordan Peele. That's what he sounds like.
Oh, okay. It's a Mark Knopfler impression. Yeah. I thought you were just using your normal weird voice.
Man, you suck. I don't know
why.
God,
it's going to kill me. Who sang the song? Someone's slipping into the Twilight Zone.
Golden Earring.
Oh, okay, there we go. Great. Perfect.
What you've just slipped into is Eleanor's favorite running gag of the fifth dimension of Twilight Zone podcast.
Oh, really?
Well, you know, it has yet to be introduced on an actual show.
But she's planning for it, so wait for it, folks. It's coming. Yeah.
You guys are the first to know.
Anyway, thank you so much for joining us for this episode of Nerdy Show. We're going to continue this every other week schedule and see what happens. I have some plans for things I want to do this year on this program, which I think you'll really like, that sort of like looking back and also looking forward at the same time. But that requires that I have a little bit more free time than I've had of late, and I've launched a podcast. And
360 vision. How do you even do that?
Wait, what?
And you look forward and backward at the same time.
Oh, you spin around in a chair real fast.
Cool.
You get real dizzy. So, yeah. Thank you, as always, as I've said, for joining us on these strange little sojourns while things are a bit topsy-turvy in our world. But there are so many good things coming. We are, while our titular podcast of 10 years suffers under the weight of it. We are doing actually the best work of our lives. Meanwhile, we just do this and we're like, what are we gonna do?
But I had fun.
I had fun too. I love hanging out with the both of you, and I'm very, very, very pleased to be hanging out with the person who I love the most in the entire world.
And also Eleanor.
on this show.
I have to say, get a room.
But then you
were,
like,
you were talking about me!
Okay. Goodbye, everyone. Have a lovely morning, afternoon, or night.
Have a lovely morning after. Noon or night.
You waiting for me? I'm just going to say goodnight.
I don't know.
Good book. Good. That's how tired I am. Good
book night.
I'm the book night. The good book.
Ah!
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.